Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So all of you are in for a treat. We have a very special guest, Dhruv Prabhu here, who's made a very beautiful book that will amaze you. And we'll have also scheduled class, so you'll have to deal with me too. So that's, you know, there's always two sides of a story. So does anybody have a cell phone? Raise your hand. So we're going to make use of it. If you can go on the World Wide Web and search Parama Karuna, P-A-R-A-M-A, Karuna, K-A-R-U-N-A. Did you find it? So we have a certain song that we sing before class. Oftentimes it is the song called Jai Radha Madhava, a very beautiful song done by Bhaktivinod Thakur. But this is a song by Lochan Das Thakur, Parama Karuna. And since everybody has phones nowadays, even 13-year-olds and everybody has phones, so we just ask you to look it up. Raise your hand if you found it. Okay. And others, are you have any difficulty finding the lyrics? The website that's usually useful for this is called KK Songs. KK Songs. Krishna, I think it's Krishna Kirtan Songs or something. Did you find it? You got it? Oh, okay. All right, so let's do it. What, you want a little cartels? Yeah, I got a little cartel. Tiny ones. Okay, and I think I'll get all the lyrics right. It's in my head, so you just let me know. Parama karuna bahut jana Nithai Gaura Chandra Parama Karuna Pahuidi Janna Nithai Gaura Chandra Parama Karuna Shava Avatara Sharashyamani Kevala Ananda Kanda Vatara Sarasyamane Shava Avatara Sarasyamane Kevala Ananda Kanda Sarasyamane Kevala Ananda Kanda Bajo Bajo Bhai Chaitanya Nithai Sudida Vishvasya Kore Bajo Bajo Bhai Bajo Bajo Bhai Chaitanya Nithai Dida Vishwasha Kore Bajubajubai Chaitanya Nithai Dida Vishwasha Vishaya Chariya Sera Samajiya Muke Bolo Hari Hari. Is that right? Vishaya Chariya Sera Samajiya Vishaya Chariya Sera Samajiya Muke Bolo Hari Hari Chariya Majiya Deko Ore Bhai Chi Bhuvane Nai Emona Doyala Data Deko Ore Bhai Chi Bhuvane Nai Emona Doyala Data Deko Ore Bhai Chi Bhuvane Nai Emona Doyala Datta Deko Apana Karama Pashupaki Jure Pashana Vidare Shuniyara Gunagata Pashupaki Jure Pashana Vidare Shuniyara Gunagata Pashupaki Jure Pashana Vidare Shuniyara Gunagata Shuniyara Gunagata Samsare Majiya Rohili Poriya Se pada nahilo asha Samsare majiya rohile poriya Se pada nahilo asha Samsare majiya rohile poriya Se pade nahilo asha Samsara majiya Hele podiya Ben nahilo Apana karama Bhunjaya shamana Kahe ye lochana dasha Apana karama Bhunjaya shamana Apana karama Bhunjaya shamana Kahe ye lochana dasha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Jai Shri Shri Radha Kalachanji Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Gaura Premanande. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, Edam Pushvate Vacham, that Arjuna, don't be bewildered by the Pushpita Vacham, the flowery language of the Vedas, which promises heavenly delights. As we read this morning, a quote from the Mahabharata in the Sri Chaitanya, it was quoted in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Tarko Pratishtat Shrutiya Bibhina Rasa Rishi, I forget the rest. Hare Krishna. So Tarko, that arguments, there's different arguments that you have, the system of logic. And the system of logic can be like a game, and whoever is just more experienced in the game can always refute the next person. And someone who's very experienced in the game of logic can present something that is untrue. So there's no consistency at the end. You cannot, logic can be a tool, but it cannot be a revealer of the absolute in itself. It's inconclusive. And rishis are great sages. Rishi in this term really means philosopher. Now, can you be recognized as a great philosopher if your philosophy is the same as someone else? For example, is there any recognized, amazing scientists who have just discovered nothing, but are simply repeating everything as it is. The Rishi who is discovering has some idea, has some personal conception that is different from others, then he is recognized, oh, great philosopher, great scientist. So there, still inconsistency. How can you find the absolute? And then it says the sastra, also inconclusive, because it is written for whom? It is written for everyone. So you have sacred literature that is written for those who are in tamagun. You have sacred literature that's written for those in rajagun. You have sacred literature for those in sattvagun. You have sacred literature written for those who are interested in spirituality and transcendence and even above that. So there are different levels. So you might read a hymn in one of the Vedas and it says, oh, you do this yajna, nice house will come to you. And, oh, must be, Vedas are talking about this. Nice house must be the goal of life. So inconclusive. But it says, guhya means hidden or secret. Within the heart of the Mahajan, in the great saints, these things, the actual essence of life can be revealed. So Bhagavad Gita speaks about the essence. Srimad Bhagavatam as well. Dharma Projito Kaitavatra Paramonimatsaram Satam. That the Bhagavatam begins by stating that this book actually is not interested in Karmakanda. It's not even interested in Jnanakanda. It is going to the upasana, the bhakti path, which is the essence of all these sacred literatures. So about 95% of the Vedas are going to deal with a lot of the material things. How to live life, how to do agriculture, how to run a country, how to get things to come your way. So Krishna tells Arjuna, don't become bewildered by these things. You should go deeper. Then you got maybe about 3% that goes into the philosophical side. The Upanishads. Then it gets more philosophical. So that is the Jnanakanda. Then you have about 2% that goes into more of the essence. And then there are levels and levels of even more refined that deal more essential lessons. For example, the entire Bhagavad Gita is considered the essence of all the Vedic literatures, and all the essences of Bhagavad Gita are within the 7th and 12th chapter, and the essence of the 7th and 12th chapter is found in the 9th chapter, and the essence of the 9th chapter is man man bhava mad bhakto mam yaji mam naskuru mam eva satya atmaivam atmana mat parayana, that if you always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me, surely you will come to me. But you might not get that by studying all the Dharma Sastras. You might not get that if you study some book about how to build a spaceship. There are books like that in the Vedas. How to build Vimanas and how to do agriculture. You might not get that there. And so Krishna is encouraging people to go wherever they're at through the Sastra. For example, if someone is atheistic, now you find in the Bhagavad Gita you have sections where Krishna says things like, "What is a verse where he discourages deity worship?" I can think of the one where he says, "Alpamedasam." "One who is looking after temporary fruits." What is the word? Phalam. Anybody? Come on, help me out. He says, fruits that are temporary, those who are have small minds, alpa made, a very small brain substance, they chase after, they worship devatas, and because their desires are for temporary gains. Does anybody know the Sanskrit? That? Antavat. Antavat means perishable. Antuvat tu palam tesham tad bhavati alpa medasam deva deva yojoyanti mad bhakti anti mamapi. Those who worship devas, they go to planets of the devas, but which is a temporary situation. The devas are in, for those who are just walking in, that it means angels. Many people worship angels to get something. Yojoyanti mad bhakti mam yanti mamapi. But those who worship me come to me. So, if in the Bhagavad Gita he speaks in this kind of way that is opposed to the worship of angels for materialistic thing, then you may ask, well, why is it there in the first place? Why is deva worship there? Why is it in the 4th chapter talking about how you have to, or is it chapter 3, that he says, if you don't offer to the devas, then you're a thief. Because the devas are supplying everything. So why is he speaking in this way? So, it is meant to progressively lead someone to something higher. If you're an atheist, if you recognize, oh, there are powerful human-like beings that are above me, then that is one step. That understand that there's something above you. Maybe you don't have any conception of God, but there's something that, yeah, there are beings that supply rain, that supply, that are responsible for the ordination of sunlight, moonlight, fire, or the power and fire, and the nature working in a certain way that we can get food. So that type of recognition is higher than not recognizing anything above you. Maybe thinking you are all in all, and nothing's really more important than your desire. So that's one step. So there's deva worship there. So you can recognize something higher than you. And in fact, in the ancient system in India, when you performed a sacrifice, you got a result. Very tangible, very prevalent result right in front of you. You would get a result. Sometimes even the devatas would appear in the sacrifice offering you the thing. You know, you say, yeah, I saw those guys, you know, big dude with lots of eyes or, you know. So you see, it was something that was experienced. Imagine you are an aborigine and they invite you to a city to live in the city and they say, Kenmore, this device, Kenmore microwave. You press 100, put your food in, close the door, press start, food comes out hot. When that food comes out hot, you have developed faith in Kenmore. Isn't it? If you see another device made by Kenmore, and they said this thing actually washes your clothes, whoa, then you're going to have faith in that. You might go through the process of experiencing, applying yourself in that, putting your clothes in, washing, and then your faith develops even further. So in the Vedic culture, a person may worship the devatas, and the result is they have some faith in the sastra. But what happens, they hear more of the sastra. Hearing more of the sastra, what do they learn? Ooh, devatas even have problems. So first, the first level is, the person will do sacrifices for something in this life. House by the sea, HDTV, Jaya Jagadish Hari. So a person will do something. I want something right now. Oh Lord, give it to me. They'll do some sacrifice. Result comes. Oh, faith is there. But then more study, more hearing from the sacred teachers, the brahmanas, the sadhus, they hear, whoa, wait. Indra, sometimes he gets dethroned by great powerful demons like Hiranyaksha Hiranyaksha's most unhappy day is today because this is the appearance of Varahadev who got rid of Hiranyaksha. And then we also get Nrisingadev because of that. So we're gonna see some beautiful pictures of Lord Nrisingadev. We also call Nrisingadev's appearance day. Maybe you can clarify it if it's the right day, but sometimes we call it Hiranyakashipu's disappearance day. So the person hears more, and they hear, well, if you, then comes the conception of the next life. You can do sacrifices in a greater way, and enjoy in your next life to a greater degree. Forget human life, earthly life. Earth is called Martyaloka, death world. People live only 100 years. What is that? Ridiculous. Only a fool would settle for that. You could live 200,000 years, 800,000 years. And 100,000 years is 1 second for Lord Brahma. 100,000 years. 98,000 years is 1 second for Lord Brahma. If you live 311 trillion years, then 1 second will translate to 98,000 years. Krishna was cowherd boys were taken. Brahma came back 100,000ths of a second later. He was really excited. What did he do? What happened? But then the person hears more and more. Wait a minute. Devas even have problems. Even sometimes their cell phones go off in class. And problem with being in the deva world is that you get cursed. You work so hard to get up there and then boom, down. And so they hear from the Vedas, from the sadhus, from the sastra. Well, there's something more beyond that. There is Brahman. Brahman, God. And the first conception that person might be introduced is the divine light that pervades everything. Brahman. Or as we say in ISKCON, Brahman, but it's actually Brahman. Just to let you know. Sorry. So Brahman. So the person says, forget the material things. I want some kind of salvation. I want to go to heaven. I want nirvana. I want salvation. So that is moving out of karmakanda to jnanakanda. You have these three strands in all traditions. Karmakanda, gimme, gimme, gimme. Jnanakanda, gimme. I don't want that. I want a spiritual aspiration, some salvation. I want to get out of this world. Troubles everywhere. Is there any saint out there that says, no, it's fine? Does Jesus Christ say, oh, this place is really cool, just stick around here, it's just fun? And no, Buddha, Jesus, Prabhupada, everybody says, no, get out. Krishna, get out. He says, Ashvatam, it is a very impermanent place. The banyan tree, Prabhupada said, if you stand upside down, it is very uncomfortable. So there's the upside down banyan tree in 15th chapter. So Bhagavad means this world is an uncomfortable place, get out. So again, The person may hear from the sadhus, the saints, the sastra, that there is something beyond matter and aspire to achieve that. But then by further association, by further hearing, they hear that actually better than Brahman realization is Paramatma realization. And better than Paramatma realization is Bhagavan realization, realizing God's personal features and having a personal interaction with the Supreme. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita said that if you take the happiness derived on earth, multiply that thousands and thousands of times, you get Janaloka. Multiply that thousands and thousands of times, you get Tapaloka. Multiply that thousands and thousands of times, you get Brahmaloka. You multiply that thousands and thousands of times, you get the happiness of Brahmajyoti merging into the Supreme. But you multiply that billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of times, is not equal to one drop of the happiness of the ocean that the person experienced in Krishna Prema. So you have two brothers who appeared to distribute that Krishna prema to everyone. Parama karuna. Parama means, like we have param atma, the supreme karuna, merciful. Parama karuna. Pahu, these lords, two dwijana, nitai guru chandra. So Krishna and his brother Balaram appeared 500 years ago. Krishna came. Externally, he wanted to teach what people should do in this age. What is practical for this day and age? Simply chant the name of God. Don't try to meditate underwater for hundreds of years, because you'll just die. You can't do it. Don't try to throw 100 pounds of gold into the fire for sacrifice, because you don't have it. Don't try to do the deity worship. You'll do it wrong. You're not pakka enough to do everything as I did in Dwarpa Yuga. But chanting, everyone can do, even the child. So these two brothers, Pahu Dvijana, Nitai Gora Chandra, Shaba Avatara, they are the essence of all incarnations, the crest jewel, Sharo Shiomani. Shiomani is the jewel. And what kind of thing do they give? Kevala Nandakanda, very, very easy process of devotional service. Sing, dance, eat prasadam. So easy. So, Bhajo, bhajo, bhai, worship these two, my brothers, oh my dear brothers, worship these two lords, bhajo, 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 bhai, Chaitanya Nitai, Srididha, Vishwashakori, with firm faith and conviction. Vishaya Charya, Sera Samajya, but one requirement, you must give up the idea of sense gratification. Things become material when it's just the perception of it. Because everything is Krishna's energy. Brahma Arpanam, Brahma Havir, Brahma Hutam in chapter 4, Bhagavad Gita. That everything becomes spiritualized when you engage it in the connection process called yajna or sacrifice. So when you connect everything to God, then that thing is the whole thing is spiritual. But as soon as you see, oh wait, this is set aside for me. As we say in the fire sacrifice, Idam Nishingaya Swaha, Swaha, Idam Namama, this is for Lord Nishingadev. It's not for me. Idam Namama. But as soon as you say, oh wait, put a little side for me. That's my side, my cut. Then that means that relationship is all material. So we want to change that conception. So, bhajo bhajo bhai chaitanyai nitrida vishvashakori pash, sudida vishvashakori. I think the next line is pashu. Pashu is an animal. Paki, the birds and the animals. Pashu paki jure, they're crying in ecstasy. And we've heard about this morning about Lord Chaitanya's walking through the forest of Vrindavan and what happened. It was so ecstatic. Pashu paki jure and bhashana vidare, the stones, even stones melt in the presence of the Lord. Pashana vidare shuni yara guna gata, simply by hearing the guna, the lila, the activities or nature of the Lord gata. Hare Krishna. So we heard this morning that if you said to Lord Chaitanya the word Vrindavan, he would just go into ecstasy. It's like, boom, that was like too much for him to take. Just say the word Vrindavan. Then it was even much more of a problem when he started walking from Puri to Vrindavan. Then that ecstasy times 100 times. And he was walking to Vrindavan and it was building up. And by the time he got to Vrindavan, it was 1,000 times stronger. Right before he got to Vrindavan. And as he entered Vrindavan, it became 100,000 times stronger. This ecstatic feeling that Lord Chaitanya was feeling. And when the cows saw Lord Chaitanya, their eyes got really big and they all surrounded him and said, "Moo!" And they came and they went to lick him. And the cowherd gopas, the men were like, "No, cows, come back, come back." And they had struggled to get their cows not to go to Lord Chaitanya. And the deer, as soon as they saw Lord Chaitanya too, they came. The Mrigi Mrigi, the girl and the does and the bucks, they immediately went without by an eye, no fear. They went straight to Lord Chaitanya, started licking him and following him. Then the peacocks came and they started to dance in front of him. And the cuckoos and the parrots, those beautiful green parrots in Vrindavan, they started to sing sweetly on the fifth note. And the bumblebees came and they offered to, they followed the Lord as well. Very beautiful scene. And the Lord, it says, Vrikkalata, he gave hugs to the Vrikkalata, the trees and creepers. And the trees and creepers started to cry, "Madhu, honey." Madhu Ashru. They started to cry honey. You know, the trees have sap and honey and all kinds of nectars. And already this is a very fantastic scene we're hearing. Crying honey. And Lord Chaitanya saw two parrots. He put out his hands. And the parrots landed in his hands and he desired the parrots to speak. And so immediately the Shuka and Sari, the male bird and the female bird, he started chanting these beautiful shlokas in glorification of Krishna. And then the female parrot, she said, no, she started chanting beautiful shlokas in glorification of Srimati Radharani. And this way, and then Lord Chaitanya at some point, he couldn't take anymore. He fell on the ground unconscious. And they started going into his ear, chanting Krishna. Actually, he said to the deer, "Krishna Bol, Krishna Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol." And so the deer began to get up and dance and sing. Not just in Jarikanda, but they also dance and sing with Lord Chaitanya in Vrindavan. And then they started to wake him out of that ecstasy. They said some mantras in his ears. And then he started to get really wild, started rolling on the floor. Thorns were poking him. So they hold him. He was Krishna desiring to feel that ecstasy that Radharani feels. Not to tell you the whole story, but actually Rukmini was crying for Krishna. Now, Krishna is Sachit Ananda Vigraha. He's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. He has Bhagavan, all the opulences. Aishwarya Samagrasa, Yasasa Shriya, beauty, wealth, fame, power, wisdom. So what does he need? What is he of need? He doesn't need anything. He should have everything. But Rukmini was crying for Krishna. And what was she crying? She felt bad for Krishna. See, you're missing out. What kind of life is this? You don't have everything. You're missing so much, Krishna. Krishna, what are you talking about? Devi, why are you crying and what is this that you're talking about? He said, the experience that your devotee feels in serving you is wonderful. They're actually more attached to the service to you than you. They will not give up their service. They may give up you, they'll not give up your service. They always want to serve you in all circumstances. And so Krishna is hearing this, and what happens to him? He doesn't become Shamchandra. He turns into Gaurachandra. His skin starts to turn golden as Lord Chaitanya. And so Lord Chaitanya is Krishna coming to experience what Rukmini was crying for, to be the recipient, the giver of love to Krishna, and rather than just the recipient, but the reservoir, the container of love. So Pashana Viktare Shuni Yara Gunagata. Then the next line is Deko Odebai. See these brothers, Tri Bhuvane Nai. Throughout the whole three worlds, there's upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. You will not find anybody like these guys. Deko Odebai Tri Bhuvane Nai Aimana Dhoyala Data. So kind and merciful. Pash Aimana Dhoyala Data. Maybe I got the Pashupaki Jewer for the other one. Samsara Majiya Rohili Puriya. So at the end of the prayer, he begins to have a very humble mood, very lamentable mood. He said, you know, Bunjaya Karama, I really cannot relish Lord Chaitanya's act. I wish I had actual true love for Lord Chaitanya. I cannot really relish. It is because of my past bad activities. I'm being punished by Shamana Yamaraj. So he becomes a very humble mood. Is there any line that we're missing there? Do you see? And what's before that? And then the second line of the second verse. What are the two lines of the second? Second verse. What's the second verse? Baja baja baya chaitanya nitaya sridi ravishar koni kori. Okay, I think we covered everything, isn't it? All right. So that's all the verses of the song. Very nice song. You guys should lock it in and sing that song at home. Prabhupada gave an amazing lecture in Atlanta. It was an arrival lecture. And we're going to play you the whole lecture. The whole entire lecture. It's 2 minutes long. Prabhupada is a very reserved person. He's a very exalted devotee of Lord Krishna. But he did not want to behave in a very ecstatic way in front of people, because people take those things cheaply and they'll start to imitate, pretending to be great exalted souls. But sometimes great exalted souls, the emotions are very strong and they can't quell that feeling. So Prabhupada gave this lecture in Atlanta. He was visiting the temple. First thing he says, I've been traveling to Caracas, to these various places. And he says, and I see your temple is the best. And everybody's roaring. So we'll play it for you. You guys ready? Little sweet part here. Hopefully we're going to hear it nicely.
The following is an arrival address given by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, recorded on February 28, 1975, in Atlanta, Georgia.
I'm very glad to see you. First of all, Mexico City.
Yes.
So Mexico City, then Caracas, then
Miami.
I see your temple is the best. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very kind. Parama Koruna Pahudvi Jana. Two lords, Nitai Gaura Chandra, Nitananda Prabhu and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are very kind. They have appeared just to reclaim the fallen souls of this age.
More kind than Krishna.
Krishna, he is also very kind. He comes to deliver. But Krishna demands the first of all surrender. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not demand surrender. He's so hard. So, excellent, how sweet it is from the mouth.
here you see the heart of Srila Prabhupada is being, just like Lord Chaitanya, being shaken by the kindness of Lord Chaitanya. He's very kind. Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Pritaja. Mam ekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarve papyebhyo mokshayishami masucha. Abandon all varieties of duties and religion, just surrender unto me. I will free you from all sin. But Lord Chaitanya does not demand. He just says, chant and you will get the same result. You don't have to abandon. You just keep on progressing on that chanting path. Just try to give up the idea that this is for my enjoyment. Just offer... just chant for Krishna. You don't have to be like was it Ambarish Maharaj? Who is the Vamana? Who surrendered to Vamana? Bali Maharaj. Yeah, you fully surrendered. You don't have to be Bali Maharaj. You just chant, and then eventually you'll become Bali Maharaj like. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there anything you'd like to share? Any comments or reflections? Otherwise, we can also continue. We have some wonderful things to see. In about year 2000, I saw an amazing video published by ITV, ISKCON Television, where there is a young boy who spent years traveling through South India, visiting all the Nrisimhadev temples. Some of these temples had self-manifested deities of Lord Nrisimhadev. Nobody carved them. Some of these temples were in caves, and you had to walk half-submerged, and there was a whole video. And here's the boy right here. Whole wonderful presentation. So,
Jai Nrisimhadev, Jai Srila Prabhupada. So my name is Dhruva Das, and I was born into ISKCON. And from a very young age, I had this attraction to Lord Nrisimhadev. In New Vrindavan, they established this deity, big deity. So ever since that day, the kind of obsession sunk in very deeply. So as I obviously went through, you know, becoming a teenager, and I was anti-school, which I probably shouldn't say too loud. I don't know, people were doing the normalities of life, you know, going to school, hanging out with friends, and just the common life. And I had this desire not to do that. So to rebel in more of a way that was like spiritual, I guess. So when I found out Nrisimhadev appeared in India, I didn't know he was my guru at the time, but Indradrumna Swami, he was like an uncle to me. He said, yeah, go. There's this place where he manifests. There's 9 temples. I said, really? So one day I was, you know, I was making a little bit of money when I was young, and I got in a fight with my boss over, I was doing puja to Nrisimhadev, and he didn't like the incense. So I said, that's it. So I asked him to pay me, and then that day I think the next day I flew to India and went to Ahobalam, and it was an adventure. And I got there, I saw all the temples, and when I was done, I said, that's it. There has to be more. Why, you know, there's thousands of Krishna temples, Vishnu temples, Ganesh, Hanuman, Shiva, everybody in India since I was young going there. Why is there only one place where Nrisimhadev is? So at that time in my life, I had nothing to do. I had a little bit of money. So I inquired from the priests. I said, come on, is there any other temples? And they said, yeah, there's one here. Go up the, you know, maybe 20, 30 kilometers. So I, back then in India, it was very difficult to travel back in the 90s. They didn't have Google Maps and all these convenient things now, or cell phones. So I just hopped on a bus. I had nothing with me. I ended up in this other temple. And then it was just a domino effect. So that was in Andhra Pradesh. So I think in the first 2-3 months, I saw like 100 temples all throughout Andhra. Very like tribal, self-manifest, really far out deities of Nrsingadeva. I was blown away. And then I met one man in this cave temple where you go underground. He said, oh, my brother's sister's husband, something, is in charge of one temple in Tamil Nadu. You have to go there. So then it just kept, you know, going on and on and on for months. Then Tamil Nadu, then Kerala, Karnataka. It became like an obsession to me. But I didn't call my family, my parents for 6, 7, 8 months. I don't remember. And then I showed up to where my brother was in South India. And I hadn't seen him for months. And he said, man, the embassy's after you. Where have you been? I said, what are you talking about? I was just doing... He said, you've been gone for months. But it was like such a... It just felt like an instant because it was such a gratifying... It was like a drug, you know. Another new temple, a new adventure, meeting devotees of Nrsingadeva that made me realize that I really wasn't a devotee of Nrsingadeva. And so it was awe-inspiring. So I met many swamis and sadhus along the way, within ISKCON, outside of ISKCON. And they're all like, well, why are you doing this? And I was like, I don't know. I just need to find more of his temples and learn more about him. And then one day a friend was like, well, why don't you do some sort of a book? And back then I was young. I was like a brahmachari. I didn't wear the cloth, but I didn't want a family or anything. And then one day family came, wife came, and that slows you down quite a bit. So my obsession, though I had a lot of energy to look after my family, I still was kind of like, I got to go to India. Because my businesses were in India, so it was perfect. India, Nrsingadeva, go back home and slave away. And then, you know, it kept being like this. But then I became confused because I'd seen over like 600-700 temples all around India. And how am I going to put that into a book for all of his devotees? So I became like a bit flabbergasted, like what am I going to do? And things went on hold, and then, as we know, life gets the best of us sometimes. So recently in the last 3 years, I got back into it and I had my good friend Damodar, who's a professional photographer. He said, well, let's go and see what happens. Because back when I was photographing the temples, there was 1 megabyte digital camera. So you can imagine now the iPhone has like 16 megabyte or something crazy. So I had to go to hundreds of temples and re-photograph them. And it was about a 4-month adventure of a lifetime. And I've had a lot of adventures in my life with Nrsingadeva. But this 4 months with my photographer, Damodar, is the kind of the essence of this book, Narsimha the Lost Temples. And we basically bring you along to each temple and in the adventure. And then we describe the history of the temple. And I was thinking, how can I like portray, like how can I make people feel the power and Shakti of these deities? So obviously through photos, because we're all visual beings, right? And the first and foremost is that the book is dedicated to Srila Prabhupada, because without him, you know, most of us Westerners wouldn't have a clue about who Lord Nrsingadeva is. And yeah, true. Even most of the, it's funny in India when I travel or when I'm doing my tours throughout Europe and America, a lot of Indians I meet, they're either from, you know, Andhra or Karnataka. And most of their Ishtadevs or their family deity is Narsimha. So their foundation of Hinduism, as I've found through my thesis, is Lord Nrsingha because he's the remover of obstacles. So all the different religious sects in India, the Ramanujas, the Madhvas, everybody, they worship Lord Nrsingha across the board as the divine protector. There's no fighting. Oh, Vishnu is God, Krishna is God, Shiva is God. Nothing. There's no talk. Even the Shivites, you mentioned Narsimha, ha, Narsimha, divine protector, remover of obstacles. There's no up and down or anything. Now, if you say Vishnu, then there's fight for hours. Who is God, Vishnu or Krishna, you know? But when I say, no, Narsimha, then there's just silence. Oh, my, Narsimha. you know? And so, yeah, no argument. Even the big swamis, you know, in the Madhvamat, in the Ramanujamat, they're just so, yeah, Narsingadev is, so through Narsimha, they worship their Bhagawan. So in Tirupati, all the Brahmins, my friends, they worship Narsimha first before they approach Balaji every morning. Same thing in Srirangam. Same thing in Udupi. All the different, you know, centers. So I was trying to think, Narsimha, some of these forms are lost and hidden in time because contemporary India is so amazing. It's like blossomed like insanely quick in every avenue. Technology, business, wealth, so much. It's amazing. It blows my mind every time I go there. But included in that blossoming is also the roots sometimes get hidden. So a lot of these mystical Nrisingadev temples. And, you know, the family deities. Like this temple was found in a cave 250 years ago. And he's in the middle of the jungle. So this man, one day, he had to make money. So he was thinking, maybe I should do less puja to Narsimha. I have to go to Bangalore and make some money. So he got attacked by a tiger. He's my friend, I've known him a long time. And the tiger bit at his leg, you know? And he's in that night, Narsimha came to him in a dream and said, I've taken care of you, your father and mother, their father and mother. Why do you think I won't continue taking care of you? So many far out stories. Like one of my favorite is everybody thinks Nrisingadev comes in this ugra where he's killing. And those intestines represent all of our inherent like greed, lust, jealousy, anger. Right? That's what the intestines of Hiranyakashipu represent. Hiranyakashipu was an amazing man. So is Hiranyaksha. They thought more about God than we did, in a sense. They just thought, the only difference is they thought they were God. They challenged God. So Nrisingadev removed that ego that we all have. So seeing so many forms, after I saw this for the first time, I don't know if you can see, it's like a lion statue. So that blew my mind, thinking, how can you worship a lion statue as Narsimha? But it was worshipped by the tribals in the area. And I'd heard for years that they did that. These tribals would carry their deity of Narsimha wherever they went to plant their crops every year. So every time I would find a new idea of Narsimha or an understanding, it's still blowing my mind away. So for the last 18 years, I've been working on this project. And finally it's come to be as Narsimha, the Lost Temples. And I'm here to share it with all of you. And if anybody's interested in, to talk about Nrisingadev or to get a book, please see me. And I'm really humbled by this opportunity. Thank you for letting me talk. I really appreciate it. May Lord Nrisingadev bless you all. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai Nrisingadev.